Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here at Inside the Ropes, episode number 250 of Monday Night Raw, if you're watching along with us on the network. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always in this retro experience by Sondra. It is Fastlane Sunday, Sondra. Are you excited for Fastlane?
Yeah, no, not really. I'm not very excited for Fastlane at all. Honestly, I think I enjoyed Retro Raw more than SmackDown again this week because Retro Raw has been stepping it up. Things are actually happening. Stories are happening. Characters have motivations. Things make sense to me. Unlike the world of SmackDown Live in the year of our Lord 2018.
Well, I'm not going to allow Sondra to say one word on this, but what I will say is, if you're not on Patreon, you're going to want to sign up because we're going to talk at length about the proposed match for WrestleMania with Shane McMahon and Dolph Ziggler. So, just, it's worth signing up just to hear what Sondra's going to have to say about that.
Oh boy, do I have thoughts. Oh boy, do I have thoughts about that, guys.
So it's time to talk about Retro Raw, March 9th, 1998. Last week was a very big episode. Mike Tyson joins DX. The Undertaker returns to say he's going to fight his brother. Sable and Luna are going at it. It's all happening on Retro Raw. So we'll see how it does this week, if they can keep that momentum going. We open the show with Ken Shamrock, the world's most dangerous man, teaming with the world's most boring man, Steve Blackman, who has his little things, but still doesn't look excited that he has his little nunchuck things.
I don't understand how he can look so bored and confused when he has light-up sticks. Light-up sticks are exciting. At least look excited about the light-up sticks.
He's not, though. He's just like...
He just looks confused as to why he's there.
He could not give two fucks about this.
But I thought was more interesting was the Nation of Domination's entrance, because Rocky is very clearly coming out like well behind the rest of the Nation of Domination, and Michael Cole very clearly on commentary is like, Farouk, the undisputed leader of the Nation of Domination, because Farouk is leading D'Lo and Kama out like normal, and then Rocky's just trailing behind them because he needs all of his glory and all of his limelight.
So I'm curious, because I've not asked you this in a while, and I just want to get your take. So obviously, you know, Farouk and The Rock, it's been a very slow burn story, right? With the Nation of Domination,
yes,
and what's going to happen. Do you think that one of them is more in the right than the other? Like, is Farouk the guy who's completely in the right? Has Rocky got some valid points as well? Like, assess the Nation of Domination with The Rock and Farouk, because they're the two guys that do not get on. Everybody else is just trying to keep the peace. Whether it's D'Lo or Kama or Mark Henry, it's just The Rock and Farouk that don't get on. Is there someone clearly in the right?
I don't know if I would say there is. It seems like Farouk is more in the right than Rocky. It seems like Rocky is just this kind of young punk who's coming up and going like, hey, everybody pay attention to me, and now I'm the Intercontinental Champion. I mean, I guess Rocky has a point, because he is the Intercontinental Champion. Farouk's not the Intercontinental Champion anymore, right? Like, Brock is the Intercontinental Champion, so he's like, hey, so I'm an actual champion here. You should pay attention to me, and I should be in charge of stuff. But Farouk, I mean, it's always been Farouk's group. Farouk is the one who put the group together. Farouk is the one who brought everyone in. He brought everyone together. So, of course, he wants to maintain leadership over the group, although I don't know what he actually does as leader, because it's not like he's really done all that much as leader lately. Like, other than just say, hey, you guys stand here and then raise your fist when I say to. Farouk hasn't been that effective of a leader. So even though I think Farouk has more of a point because it is his group to start with, it kind of makes sense that Rocky might try to usurp power.
It's interesting.
A really interesting dynamic, though, and I'm into it.
And that's why it's interesting that The Rock and Farouk are the two teaming here in this match of the Nation.
I heard that it was The Rock and Farouk, I actually went, ooh. Ooh, they have to team together, which is exactly the reaction I'm supposed to have, right? Because they're unlikely allies here who are on the same team, but, you know, like, there's been dissension. And throughout the whole entire match, Michael Cole is just banging on about how they're working together like a well-oiled machine, and maybe we overestimated the dissension between Farouk and Rocky Maivia. And then, of course, it turns out we have not overestimated the dissension between Farouk and Rocky Maivia, because there is definite dissension happening.
It's definitely going on. So we have this tag match with Shamrock and Blackman against The Rock and Farouk. At one point, we do get the People's Elbow on Ken Shamrock. Again, it's
and
not
called
like...
the People's Elbow for the first time, I believe. We yep. haven't heard it called that, right? Because Michael Cole says, and Rocky drops the big elbow, and Kevin Kelly goes, I believe he wants us to refer to it as the People's Elbow from now on.
Which is just such a gloriously dickish thing to do. You know, like, mm-hmm. That's the People's Elbow, because I care about the people.
Because he's calling himself the People's Champion, which still doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I know that that goes on to be The Rock's thing, that he's the People's Champion, the millions, and blah, blah, blah. But at this point, it doesn't make any sense that he's like, I'm the People's Champion. It's just all so facetious, which is what makes it good.
So in the end, the Shamrock's in, he like power slams The Rock, he does a Hurricanrana, Farooq breaks up a pin, Steve Blackman comes in, they're all brawling, and then The Nation comes in for a DQ. And then after the match finishes, The Rock sends The Nation away so he can beat up Shamrock all by himself. Because Blackman's, you know, down on the outside. So
Blackman just disappears and is dead for a little while.
Yeah, I like to think he just died of his own boredom. And
he just couldn't be bothered to get up.
So Rock is like, you know, got the upper hand, he's going to beat Shamrock up by himself. Farouk's like sending the troops away. And then, of course, when that happens, Shamrock comes back, snaps, and puts an ankle lock on The Rock on the floor. Rock's begging for help, and Farooq is just looking at him like, you made your fucking bed, lie in it. So, again, what I think is kind of fascinating about the dynamic is that Farooq's being a dick here. It's not like Farooq's, like, being the good guy and Rock's being the bad guy. They're both kind of, like, tit for tat with each other, which is...
But I think Farooq is being a lot less of a dick than Rocky here. Because Rocky was the one to send them away, right? Like, he was the one to say, hey, go away, I want him. And The Rock is such a cartoon character at this point, right? Like, he, like, with the biggest arm gestures in the world, and he's like, no, I'm gonna get him, it's my turn, and his eyes are bugging out of his head as he kind of beats up Ken Shamrock in the corner. And then I understand from Farooq's point of view why... You know, when the rest of The Nation wants to go back and help Rocky, Farooq's like, no, fuck that guy. He just sent us away because he wanted Ken Shamrock all to himself. So now he has Ken Shamrock all to himself. And this is what's going to happen. We need to let him learn his lesson, right? So, you know, Farooq is holding back Mark Henry and holding back D'Lo and holding back Kama. My favorite is Mark Henry trying to, like, act and be like, oh, but what do we do? And he's like, you can't just like... But what is going on? But why shouldn't we be helping Rocky? And it's all just so over-exaggerated. Rocky Maivia selling the ankle lock from Ken Shamrock, too, was just so good. Like, it approaches levels of, like, John Cena making fish faces whenever he's in a submission.
So that's kind of the opening segment slash match. The Rock and Farooq are still, you know, major dissension, and Shamrock is clearly wants to murder The Rock.
Did you notice at the end when Steve Blackman just reappears, like he's woken up from his wee snooze or whatever, and then Ken Shamrock raises his hand for some reason, like, hey, we won, and Blackman's just like, what?
That makes no sense.
I kind of love Steve Blackman for how shit he is. But don't forget to mention, Kenny, there were some technical difficulties during this match.
Oh, God, yes, there was.
There was a weird tracking issue. My favorite technical difficulty was the one that looked like the Usos jail graphic.
Although nothing in the world, even though we're talking about 1998, nothing will touch the 2018 pipe bomb. That is my favorite thing. The guy who's made up that thing with Punk, and it's like,
oh yeah. Did you see the Steve Austin one too?
No, I've not seen the Austin one yet.
Yeah, there's an Austin 316 one too.
Okay, the bit that I lost my shit was when the WWE shop thing came up, and every time he said best, it was like 2-for-1 on t-shirts. It was so good.
Use code the best. Hashtag get off my chest.
Oh, it's fantastic. Obviously, Shawn Michaels is not with us because he cannot at this point really do anything physical. So instead, Triple H and China are joining us. They remind us that Mike Tyson is part of DX. WrestleMania is going to be X-rated. Discretion is advised to be completely ignored. Blah, 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 blah.
Did you notice that Hunter keeps over-pronouncing everything he says because he's trying to be edgy? Like, it's gotten worse.
Well, the thing is that he's still not kind of found what his voice is. And he's trying to be Shawn Michaels. But the difference is that Shawn Michaels can kind of back it up by being really good in the ring. So, like, even though he's an idiot, it makes all these...
And Shawn Michaels, I mean, as much as I do not like Shawn Michaels and he infuriates me, at least he speaks like a human.
Yeah, whereas, like, Triple H is kind of trying to do the Shawn Michaels thing and it doesn't really come off as his own. So, And I think that's what... things tend to work a little bit better for Hunter once Sean's gone, because he kind of has to be himself. Like, he's forced to kind of do something. Hunter tells, you know, tells Owen Hart that China might just get a little bit more physical tonight than she did last week if she wants to. Sean's not here tonight. They show footage of Sean giving Sweet Chin Music to Steve Austin last week on the ramp, over and over again. And then we see Sean lounging on... He's lounging on some sort of thing, like drinking a beer. And
he looks like he's in a restaurant or a diner or something.
Yeah, I can't quite work out what he is in, but he is in some sort of establishment. He says that, you know, Mike Tyson's in DX. I love they keep need to repeat this, as if, like, we don't know that Mike Tyson... Like, the biggest entertainment guy on the planet has joined DX. I think people remember. I think
yeah,
we know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And if we didn't remember, all of the times you've shown us the footage have reminded us. Because we see it how many times on this episode? Like, four?
So many. He says the most enjoyable moment last week was making Steve Austin taste Sweet Chin Music. He's just like everybody else. Austin's going to come out mad tonight. But Austin hasn't shown Shawn Michaels anything new yet. And as far as he's concerned, Austin's a fad. Michaels is what the WWF will always be about. I just thought it was a really good promo from Michaels.
It was.
He said, you know, at WrestleMania, he's not going to step down from the top of the mountain. He won't lay down for anybody, which is good that he's bringing that up. Because now, I guess by this point, fans were beginning to realise what he was doing backstage. And that he was kind of, you know, refusing to put people over. So they're kind of bringing that into it a little bit. He won't do it for Austin either. He's going to leave WrestleMania still the champion. He guarantees it. So I thought he cut a really good promo here.
I thought it was a really good promo. The audio was kind of going in and out on it, so that was kind of weird. And I don't know if that was part of the, you know, technical difficulties of the episode, or if it was just filming in a diner was not optimal for audio production. But yeah, no, this was a very good promo. I don't think Shawn Michaels necessarily said anything new, but he definitely got his point across, and he called, you know, calling Austin a fad and saying that, you know, he's always going to be the World Wrestling Federation champion, I thought was interesting, because Austin is obviously the hot new thing. Like, he's very popular right now, and we'll see that later on. And Shawn Michaels is the established guy, right? He's been around for a long time. He's been on top for a long time. And so it does make the story more interesting. I think things are actually heating up between Shawn and Steve Austin, as opposed to just, like, Shawn keeping the belt and not wanting to tell a story with anyone, which I think is good.
Yeah. We get one of the most baffling matches of all time. Barry Windham is getting a European Championship shot.
Why? Why?
I appreciated the technical difficulties because I thought we would have to not watch Barry Windham anymore, but sadly, they didn't take over enough. That we were
Has Barry
to...
Windham just gone on like a major bender or something? When he comes out, he is looking rough. Like, worse than normal.
I mean, I don't know how he can look any worse for being 37 years old, but yes, he does
look bad. He looks terrible. I think the headband does not help because his hair is just like all floppy over the headband. It looks like he's trying to, I don't know, be an old man karate kid or something. And it's just not good. None of it is good. Hunter Hearst Helmsley is on commentary, and that's not good either. I mean, as soon as he gets on commentary before the match even starts, they're talking about how Stone Cold Steve Austin hasn't arrived in the arena yet. And so throughout the episode, we kind of get shots of the door waiting for Stone Cold to arrive, building anticipation. And you know, they're like, we have, I don't know, they were near the rear of the building or something. Hunter's like, are they positioned in your rear or near your rear? And I was like, oh boy, do I not need a whole match of this.
Yeah, Kevin Kelly gave his headset up to Triple H. And then, like, Triple H in commentary says that, like, Owen should be thanking China for helping him keep the belt last week. Barry Windham has no business wrestling. And
I love when JR asked Triple H, well, how many times did you defend that European Championship?
Yeah, calling him out on it. It was a terrible match until China low blows Owen to keep him out of the ring, and then Tim White awards Barry Windham the match via countout. Now, what you don't
After like 2 seconds.
Yeah, it was terrible. Now, what you don't know here is that this match actually injured Owen Hart.
This match?
Yes. I know, that's baffling to think about. So what happened was Owen Hart suffered a very intense ankle sprain and has ankle ligament damage when he was hopping off the ropes and landed badly on his ankle buckling. And he is going to be out of action for a little while. But they're hoping that he'll be back in time for WrestleMania. So he is back for WrestleMania. So just in case people wonder, he is back
Better
for WrestleMania.
Fuck it be.
But yeah, it's be prepared to really be sad about Owen Hart for a couple of weeks. For various reasons.
Yeah, no, seriously. And And even though Owen Hart is the European champion, it still just kind of feels like he's not doing anything. I mean, I appreciate that commentary on, you know, is always pointing out that Owen is defending the belt every week, because I guess that's somewhat of a story and it makes him seem kind of valiant. But it's just they're parading him out here against people who have no business getting title shots against him, especially when we know that the story is Owen and Triple H at WrestleMania. So it seems kind of lame and pointless for him to be defending the title. I mean, it's almost like a really, really terrible version of John Cena's US title open challenge.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's
the worst version of that.
But you're not talking about the most important thing. So Triple H and China get out of Dodge, and then Bradshaw hits the ring.
Oh, boy.
To try and beat up Barry Windham. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most excited you could be, 1 being, you know, Shane and Dolph Ziggler, where do you sit about seeing the blow-off between Bradshaw and Barry Windham?
I mean, I'd say maybe like a 3.
That high? Is that like, you know, suppressed stalker feelings giving you that?
I think so. I think it's just my, you know, my constant tie to Barry Windham. I'll never be able to quit him, you know? I'm just going to be intrigued, whatever he's doing, because I know there's a stalker in there somewhere, Kenny. I know he's still around.
You mental bastard. So
this is why you have me.
Jerry Lawler is...
But yeah, Barry Windham yelling, "It ain't over yet, Bradshaw!" Ah! Oh, man. Just bless him.
And you're like, can't it be over, though?
Like, could it be?
Please could let it be over.
Because I forget about Bradshaw. Like, I forget that Bradshaw exists, and then when Bradshaw comes out, I'm just like, oh, why are you here?
Yeah, it's bad. Jerry Lawler's concerned interviewing Paul Bearer and Kane, because obviously The Undertaker's back, blah, blah. But Paul Bearer is just so delightful that he refuses to talk about The Undertaker. He's like, I want to talk about Vader. I want to talk about what Kane did to Vader when he hit him in the eye with a steel wrench. And then all of a sudden, the lockers start opening and closing. And Jerry Lawler is so freaked out, as is Paul Bearer. And Kane is just like, Like, Kane's, like, so unfussed.
I wonder what's going on.
But I love,
I just love that Paul Bearer keeps going, quit it! And Lawler's like, I'm not doing it! So then Lawler, goes and hides behind Kane. What really cracked me up was even starting the interview, I loved this segment, by the way, Lawler looked like he was asking Paul Bearer if it was safe, like, if it was going to be safe for him to do this interview, and it looked like he was hiding from Kane behind Kane.
It was the best. Like, I now want to see Jerry Lawler and Paul Bearer in a sitcom trying to escape people.
That would be so good. That would be amazing, actually.
Because you know that, like, Paul Bearer would always not be able to keep up with Lawler. And then, like...
Just both of their facial expressions and reactions to one another, I think, would be excellent.
So, this is a great segment. Lockers, lockers open and close in. Lawler and Bearer just run away. And Kane's, like, mildly perturbed that something's
Kane's
happening.
Just like, huh. Something's happening. We did see a picture of Vader with bandages all over his head and black eyes.
Yeah, we'll see Vader again in a couple of months. Up next, we get Brian Christopher with his father, Jerry Lawler, against Aguilar with Taka Michinoku. And this is a bit so good. Like, Jim Ross mentions that the mailman might show up. Why?
What
is that? Like, he talks about the mailman. And then, like, Aguilar's had the flu, was at a temperature of 101, and then Aguilar and Brian Christopher had this match, and Aguilar's, like, he's good, but he's quite clunky.
Yeah, I mean, he's very flippy, but he's also very young, so I like these two together. I think they had decent chemistry. I thought, I felt bad for Aguilar because he had the flu and everything, too. Kevin Kelly does say on commentary that it's not technical difficulties. Everything's fine with the production truck. I mean, unexplained shenanigans, right? Like, we don't know what's going on with all of these technical difficulties, including lockers and benches opening and closing. I love that when Lawler and Brian Christopher come out, Lawler still looks spooked, too.
Yeah,
he's just
like,
the fuck is going on in this arena?
And then I love Lawler, like, so Lawler obviously doesn't want Aguilar to beat his boy. So Lawler, like, grabs Taka Michinoku and throws him into the post. And then he rolls Taka into the ring, trips up Aguilar, but then Mike Chioda clearly sees what he's done and just DQs Brian Christopher. So Jerry Lawler went to a ton of effort and got caught.
Well, what I think is really crazy is, like, something really must be amiss tonight if a referee is seeing a disqualification and calling it.
That is strange. Now, did you notice...
I mean, there are definitely ghosts in the arena.
Now, this now means that in the first three matches, we've all had DQ finishes. Or non-finishes, so, you know, not giving away any finishes on this show.
No, not at all. But I thought the dissension here was kind of fun. I mean, Brian Christopher and Taka Michinoku just kind of seem like the only two people who matter in the light heavyweight division, and all the other people just kind of cycle in and out. So, of course, there's going to be dissension between them. And Taka Michinoku squaring off with Jerry Lawler, and, you know, Lawler cheap-shotting him. But Taka stands up to him and pulls Jerry off the apron, and they fight and everything. I was into it. It was fine. It was short. It didn't last too long. And then, yeah, Jerry Lawler actually gets caught pulling Aguila off the turnbuckle, and then there's the DQ finish, and then the lights keep going out and they run away.
It's beautiful. We got a WrestleMania Millennium moment from WrestleMania 2. Now, I don't know if this is meant to be for a reason, but Andre the Giant's winning the Battle Royal and he's eliminating current WCW superstar Bret Hart. Maybe that was deliberate. Oh.
I didn't even really pay that much attention to who he was eliminating. I just saw Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 2. Did you notice the sign in the crowd that said, "I love to see a sunny butt"?
I mean, we could do a whole show just on the signs of this era. There's so much to unpack.
I mean, Nation of Masturbation was
That is
earlier.
One of my favorites. That is one of my favorites.
I mean, obviously, I'm not going to write all of them down, but that one just... I love to see a sunny butt. Not I love to see Sunny's butt. I love to see a sunny butt.
He's trying to be, like, ambiguous about it.
Right. I think we know what you mean, sir.
Up next comes the greatest segment in the history of the world, over two segments, where Stone Cold Steve Austin's arrived. He is fucking pissed. But he's more pissed off at Vince McMahon. So he comes straight to the ring, and he says that he's pissed off that Vince McMahon would dare call Mike Tyson unquestionably the baddest man on the planet. And he asked the fans, you know, do you think that's insult to Stone Cold Steve Austin? Give me a hell yeah. He's sitting down. He's going to wait for Vince McMahon to come out to the ring and sort this out. He gets asked for a beer. Is this the first time he's asked for a beer in the ring?
I believe so, because I noticed that as well.
So that's quite interesting. So Jim Ross sort of stands up and tries to talk sense at Austin. Ross just tells him to sit down. And just,
you'll,
like,
sit your cowboy ass down or I'll stomp a mud hole in you and...
And then Blackjack Lanz and Jerry Briscoe come out. They try and take Austin to the back. Austin, like, dares them to go after him. The show won't continue until Vince comes out. Then Commissioner Slaughter comes out. We see...
Austin's like, please tell me this is a rib.
Jerry Briscoe's then talking to Vince backstage, kind of saying, you know, like, you need to go out and speak to him. Vince is refusing to do it. So Austin is holding the show hostage as we go off the air for the first hour. We come back for the war zone, and Pat Patterson and security guards are out, but they're not doing anything at all. Like, Pat Patterson's just like, nope. Because if we've learned anything in the history of Retro Raw, it's that whenever Pat Patterson gets in there with his suit and his trainers, he gets beat up.
All the time. All the time. It just cracked me up that he's out there with these security guys, right? And it's not like now when security guys are very clearly, like, young indie wrestlers who are gonna get thrown around for reasons. Like, a couple of these guys could have been wrestlers, but there was this one old man, and they didn't look like they really had any business being there or being security. I mean, they just were wearing white t-shirts that said security. So, I mean, Austin makes a good point. He's like, you don't have any mace, or most importantly, you don't have any guns. I was like, yeah, please don't take guns to the arena, please. But he's like, so you can't do anything to me. He's like, especially you, Pops. And I wasn't sure if he was pointing at Pat Patterson or the old man standing behind Pat Patterson, but it was funny either way. And then, you know, security just sort of leave. And then Patterson's raging because he was like, hey, you guys are supposed to do something. And security's like, nah, we can't do anything about this. We are five people. He is one person. But no, we're scared of him.
This then finally brings out Vince McMahon in maybe the worst suit I've ever seen him wear.
And it's quite terrible.
It's really...
It's too big, too.
It's a 1970s sofa.
Mm-hmm.
So
that is accurate. Either a sofa or curtains. But, like, it looks like it's two sizes too big for him.
Yeah, and he also just looks, like, really unimpressed that he has to come out and deal with this. So he comes out, the agents and the refs are there, Vince finally gets in the ring, and Austin wants him to explain, you know, the whole Mike Tyson thing. And then Vince says, look, you know, the baddest man on the planet was a figure of speech. And then Austin says, this is a figure of speech too, and gives him the middle finger. And Vince, like, Vince's reaction facially is one of the best things I've ever seen. It's so good. And he wants to know if Vince wants him to be the WWF champion. If Vince does, just give him a hell yeah. And Vince refuses to say yes or no. He's had enough, and then Austin threatens, says to Vince, "Take your best shot, just hit me." Jim Ross is saying, "This is ridiculous." Austin's trying to get Vince riled up. He rips his jacket, calls him a yellow bastard. Vince won't do anything, and then Austin asks the crowd if they want him to kick Vince square in his ass. Of course they do. And then Vince is about to leave and tells Austin that he's going to pay for this embarrassment. And as they all head away, Austin says that he'll be beating up Triple H tonight later on. And when Shawn Michaels shows up again, he'll be doing the same to him because he's getting the WWF title, and that's the bottom line. This was excellent, I thought.
I thought this was excellent, too. I mean, ripping the jacket was a kindness because then it won't be worn again. So, I mean, Austin's just doing Vince McMahon a favor there. But, yeah, I mean, this whole thing was very intriguing. It was very intriguing to see him square up to Vince. And I think Vince played it quite cleverly as well, because when Austin said, you know, "Do you want me to be the WWF champion? Just give me a hell yeah." And, of course, the crowd goes, "Hell yeah," because the crowd all wants Steve Austin to be the WWF champion. And Vince isn't just like, "No, I don't," or "Yes, I do." He's like, "You heard what the people said," as if to indicate, "Yeah, I agree with them," but he won't say it. He won't say that he wants Austin to be the champion, because of course he doesn't want Austin to be the champion, because Austin's fucking mental, right? Like, that's one of the things. Austin is great, and I understand why he was so popular, but Austin's not right here. Austin is absolutely blowing this out of proportion. I mean, just because Vince said that Mike Tyson was the baddest man on the planet, he's taking the entire show hostage. He's threatening to beat up personnel. He's threatening to beat up agents. He's, you know, he's basically derailing all of Monday Night Raw just because Vince said a thing that he doesn't like. And then he's making the owner of the company, who has plenty of other things to do, I'm sure, come out here and address the situation. When, you know, like, he's being a pain in Vince's ass. And so I understand why Vince would be like, "No, I don't really want you to be champion." But what I really love about it is Austin's right, too. Because he's like, "What are you going to do? Are you going to fire me? Hell, WrestleMania's right around the corner, son. You ain't going to fire me. Like, you need me for WrestleMania." And he says it right to Vince's face later, too. He's like, "What are you going to do? Fire me? You're not going to fire Stone Cold Steve Austin." And he's right. They need Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's one of the biggest stars in the world. He's one of the most popular stars on the roster. If they, you know, just get rid of him and fire him, that's ticket sales. That's merch. That's everything, right? So I love that Steve Austin kind of has Vince by the balls there, because he's like, "No, I am more important to this company than, you know, like, you can't afford to lose me." And I think that's a really smart dynamic of it. But I mean, Austin's basically being kind of a petulant child here, but he's the coolest motherfucker in the world about it.
Yeah, it's like, I remember at the time kind of being like, I loved Austin, but also I was kind of like, "But why are you picking on Vince? Like, I always liked Vince because he's just bonkers. But like, I think that the whole, even up until Vince actually finally down the line actually does something, he's still kind of in the right, you know, he's still, because he's trying to just keep the peace, and Austin just is not letting him, so.
No, if this were, like, a place where I worked, and I had to choose, like, whose side I was on rationally and logically, and who I thought had more of a case here, I think Vince McMahon has more of a case. I think Austin's just kind of insane, but I also kind of love watching him be kind of insane.
Up next is a match straight from Sondra's heart, which is Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie against the Quebecers.
My first note is, I love that this match is even happening.
There's more technical difficulties again. Of course there is.
This time it's like that snow, like that, you know, like, yeah, we used to call it the ant races when I was little, or it reminded me of the Brian Pillman gun episode when, you know, they went off the air and it was this really like fake looking digital snow.
The match is very generic. It's not that exciting, sadly. But
Chainsaw Charlie's in there for way too long at the beginning.
He is. He like, and he's like kind of, you know, the babyface in peril kind of thing. Like, he's just kind of, but he's so old and he's
but
so.
But he
mental.
Can't bump around and everything. Like, he's just not. He can't move.
God bless him. You know,
I love him dearly, but he just, Cactus Jack should have been in the match a bit more than Chainsaw Charlie, I feel.
But in the end, Pierre misses like a corner charge thing, gets a double arm DDT, and catches it, pins him. So they win. But that brings out Road Dogg with his arm in a sling. And, you know, if Cactus and Chainsaw Charlie thought that the dumpster ride they took was fun, just wait till WrestleMania. Then Cactus goes after Road Dogg, but Billy Gunn appears in the ring, whacks Chainsaw Charlie with a chair, which looked like it killed him. And Cactus then, you know, runs to try and make the save, but already Cactus Jack, Chainsaw Charlie, has been murdered here in front of their eyes.
Mm-hmm. And then Billy Gunn and Road Dogg go up the ramp, and Billy's like, don't you ever, ever leave his side again, because they goaded Cactus Jack to leave Chainsaw Charlie, and so that was their big ruse, and it seems to have worked. Why is Road Dogg's arm in a sling?
So Road Dogg suffered a badly bruised shoulder in the six-man tag from in a six-man tag dark match from last week. And he's undergoing therapy for it, so he's, like, at the moment not a definite for WrestleMania. He does luckily make it, but that's why it's a legit injury.
Okay, I figured it was, because it didn't seem to be selling the car thing. I mean, I know that he said something about, like, the beating you gave us must be, like, the bubonic plague because it spread to my arm or something, and it was, I don't know, this weird explanation, kind of like when Goldust, you know, hurt his arm and then got paralyzed. but, yeah, so that was... It was something. When Road Dogg calls Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, when he calls them old fossils, I kind of realized just how weird the Legion of Doom story is when Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack are the number one contenders. Because the whole story with the Legion of Doom breaking up is that the business kind of passed them by and they got too old and they weren't part of this anymore. And, you know, they couldn't adapt with the times and all of these new young talents and whatnot were coming up and... Mm-hmm. kind of usurping their place, right? But two of those people who are kind of coming up and usurping their place are Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack, and Chainsaw Charlie's fucking old.
They are. So the Legion of Doom, let me figure out how old they were at this point in time, just so we can get a clarification, because Mick Foley was in his early 30s. How old were the Road Warriors?
Yeah, because I knew Mick Foley wasn't super old, so I mean, calling them old fossils, I mean, one of them, yes. Terry Funk is very old at this point. He's in his 50s, so...
Animal was 37 at this point, and Hawk was 41.
Okay, so really, they are not very old at all. I mean, again, that's... 41 is John Cena's age.
Yeah, exactly, so...
37 is Shinsuke Nakamura.
And Barry Windham, just baffling.
And Barry Windham, I mean.
So we're gonna get.
I'd rather be one than the other.
I don't know if basically we're gonna get a dumpster match at WrestleMania for the tag team titles.
Wait, did I miss that? A dumpster match?
I don't know if it's been announced yet, but I'm just telling you now because that's what it is.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
But yeah, there's quite a few injuries at this point. Like I say, Owen Hart injured himself during the match with Barry Windham on this show. Road Dogg injured himself in a dark match last week. Bradshaw. Was hospitalized for a few days because he had a bad left knee which had been bothering him for a couple of months, and it got so bad the entire leg was discolored, and they were Ooh. Worried he might have a blood clot, but luckily he didn't, so he's back soon, which is why he's not really been doing anything. We've been forced to have more Barry Windham than we should have. And Chains has been diagnosed with an irregular heartbeat. So Chains was no longer going to be facing Kane on the house shows. It was going to be Skull. Skull versus Kane.
I'm sure people were just clamoring for refunds when Skull replaced Chains, because everyone was just, you know, so excited to see Chains on that house show loop.
So the next segment, I'm interested.
Oh, did you notice that Cactus Jack had a really big hole in his tights?
Yeah, I did notice that.
And it was incredibly distracting. Like, I know I normally complain about his underwear lines, and they are distracting, but I was super glad that he was wearing underwear in this situation.
Oh, good God, can you imagine?
It would not be pretty, because it was right over his dick. Like, it would have been hanging out, for sure.
100%.
And also there was an NWA tag title match that was supposed to happen, but now won't happen on Raw because of the whole hostage situation and technical difficulties.
Thank God for Steve Austin.
Right? So apparently the Headbangers were supposed to face the Rock and Roll Express again. Is that what was going to happen?
Yeah,
and now it's going to happen on Superstars. And if the Headbangers win, they get 5 minutes alone with Cornette.
That's the plan.
I mean, that actually sounds like it could be kind of fun.
It does play out next week. So
okay.
So yeah, I'm intrigued about what you think about this next segment. So I'll run through it with everybody, because I don't know if you're going to think it's cool or if you're going to think it's mental or not. But anyway, Paul Bearer, easy for me to say, brings Kane out to the ring. They want to talk about The Undertaker finally. Basically the bong starts going, the lights go out, they come back on, Undertaker's standing in the ring behind Kane, Paul Bearer and Kane turn and the lights go out again, they come back on again, Undertaker's gone, and, at WrestleMania, Undertaker's going to face Kane and return to the dark side, and the corners light on fire, and that's kind of what we get. What did you make of this?
Okay, so anyone who knows me for any period of time knows that I am a huge proponent of teleportation in wrestling, right? So I loved this because it was teleportation in wrestling. It's one of my favorite things. I love when people teleport in and out of rings. It makes me happy. My favorite part about this, though, is just the editing here. When they go to take a look at the Undertaker's return, right? Paul Bearer is like, let's take a look at the Undertaker's return and, you know, let's see the footage. And it cuts to the 10-3-2-1 Slam of the Week ad thing. So you see Carl Winslow and some other woman advertising 10-3-2-1 to make phone calls. So it's like, let's go and see the Undertaker's big return. And then you just see these two people in their kitchen. And it was just like, what the fuck is this? But yes, it was the 10-3-2-1 Slam of the Week. And so then it showed the Undertaker's return. And then it showed, you know, Carl Winslow again and the woman from the ad. And then, you know, we got onto business with teleportation. But I don't know, that just cracked me up. That they were like, let's go and see the very spooky Undertaker. And it's just these, like, two lovely people in their kitchen in their home making dinner.
I kind of like the idea, like, Undertaker's now playing mind games with Kane. Because he's like, fuck you, I'm fighting you. I'm going to teleport and set the corners on fire. Like,
did the Undertaker set the corners on fire, or did Kane set the corners on fire? Because corners on fire is Kane's deal.
Well, see, I thought Undertaker did it to fuck with Kane.
Oh, I thought Kane did it to fuck back with Undertaker for teleporting.
These are the mysteries that we don't know the answers to.
I mean, I'm just saying, because Paul Bearer was talking about, you know, Kane's only just begun, and it's going to get hotter and hotter and hotter like an inferno, and he kept talking about fire and all of that. And so I don't know. I don't know who made the corners go on fire. I thought it was Kane because Kane has firepower, Undertaker has lightning power and teleportation.
Next week, Sondra, it's not Monday Night Raw. It's Roy's War on St. Patrick's Day on Tuesday night.
Why is it on Tuesday?
Preempted again. Probably the fucking dog show or something.
Another one?
Or it's either the dog show or there's tennis or something. There's always different things that the USA Network used to do. So anyway, up next, we get gold.
But I do like that Paul Bearer was great in this segment. And like when he says that he'll, you know, Undertaker, you're going to have to wrestle Kane and we'll send you back to the dark side, never to return. Because, you know, Paul Bearer was saying they did him a favor sending him to the dark side before. He could have rested in peace with his mother and father for eternity. But no. He just has to keep coming back.
It's, I think people don't give Paul Bearer enough credit because Kane and The Undertaker are very limited in what they can do, and Paul Bearer kind of has to sell everything. And he's just He's so good at it. So we get Goldust versus Mark Merrow. Goldust with Luna, Mark Merrow with Sable. During the match, Luna and Sable are going to be handcuffed to the ring post to prevent any shenanigans. It's a terrible match. It is atrocious. But
it is very bad. Agree.
When the referee is like out, Goldust gets the handcuff key from his gear and unlocks Luna. She then goes over.
Well, the referee is out because Goldust whips Mark Merrow into the referee, and then he hits a curtain call on Mark Merrow, and then also I think he hits like a leg drop on Kyoto, or he does something. He hits Kyoto again, and it's like, why is he trying to knock out the referee? He's going to get disqualified, and that's when we find out that he's going for the handcuff key, so that. He can pretend to go over to Sable, but he's really going to unhandcuff Luna, of course. He's like, you got to be nice, sweetheart. And she's like, nah.
And then she goes over and draws all over Sable's face with, like, lipstick stuff. And it's Sable, nothing is worse or more terrifying than Sable in drag screaming.
it's amazing.
It's terrifying. It's so terrifying. And then Sable just kind of, you know, looks a bit like Kamala or the Missing Link. And like everybody's trying to get Luna away. And yeah, that's kind of. And then Sable's just like fucking pissed.
Oh, she's raging. She's absolutely raging. Finally, I think, does Pat Patterson unhandcuff her eventually or whatever?
Yeah,
and then
she
tries to run after Luna and Mark Merrow, and everyone's kind of holding her back. And I don't know why they were really holding her back. I mean, like, I'm just impressed with Luna and Sable being able to run in those heels. That is a feat.
I once, when I was pissed, as a dare, put heels on a train to try and walk down one carriage, and I fell over. So I don't know how you even walk in them, never mind run.
I mean, it takes practice. And so I'm impressed by the effort. But this whole segment, though, I actually really enjoyed. I'm actually getting into the Sable stuff, Kenny. And I didn't think I would. But Luna's so great, too.
I remember when people were like, oh, you're going to hate the Atchidina. I'm like, she is going to like some stuff. Like, people just think that you're going to hate all of it. Like, there is good stuff that's terrible. But I think the Sable story at this point is really compelling. Like, because she can't really do anything, but they kind of build everything around her. And then when she does have to kind of do something, she's able to do it. So, it works.
Yeah, and I think she actually is playing her very limited role quite well. I mean, she's not nearly as good as Luna, obviously. But I think a lot of the credit goes to Luna for just being so despicable and weird and disgusting, right? Like, when they come out... Okay, I don't really understand why he's still called the artist formerly known as Goldust when he's just dressing as Goldust, but whatever. Minor quibble, I guess. But, I mean, Luna is just a bizarre creature, right? Like, she wears these clear skirts over thongs, and I don't understand what she's going for, but bless her for it. And, you know, they're making this big deal of Goldust wanting to handcuff Luna to the ring post himself. And, you know, Sable right away, when she comes out with Mark Miro, she wants to go straight after Luna. Like, she is not having any of this bullshit from Luna anymore. She's like, I want to go right after her. And you kind of understand why they have to be handcuffed on opposite ring posts, because otherwise they're just going to brawl and cause trouble, right? And, like, you get the idea that Sable really wants to get her hands on Luna. It's not just Luna goading Sable anymore. Like, it's gotten to her. And she's actually managing to emote that it has gotten to her. And I kind of, like, I feel kind of bad for Sable, because she has Luna going after her constantly, and then she also has Mark Miro just being a dick to her, right? Because, I mean, even as Sable's getting handcuffed to the ring post, Mark Miro's giving her instructions, and she just kind of gets fed up. She's like, stop it! Like, she tells Mark Miro to stop it, too, and he's like, don't tell me what to do! Rah, 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 you're my property, because I'm Mark Miro, and I'm a fucking dick. And, you know, like, she's getting fed up with all of these people coming after her in her life, and so you kind of want to get behind Sable?
Yeah, and then Goldust and Luna issue a challenge to Mark Miro and Sable for WrestleMania. So we're going to get this mixed tag match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, a mixed tag, and you know what? Kind of into it. I mean, Luna growls. She's like, I warned you I would turn your Estee Lauder face into my personal canvas.
I hate that you can do a better Luna than me. Have I ever done my Luna for you? My one word?
No,
that I can do?
No, I need you to do it right now.
Okay, I can do one word in Luna voice. Hang on. Stable! That's it. Just
Stable!
But I will say, that mixed tag at WrestleMania is fucking banging. So good. Anyway.
I'm excited for it. I genuinely am. Because I think, you know, when Sable was getting her face all, like, painted up by Luna and... You know, she was just obviously taking all of this abuse, and she couldn't do anything because she's still handcuffed. She looked raging. Like, she looked actually pissed, and I was into it. I was like, no, get her!
So WrestleMania, we've got that.
I feel like this is when I started to come around on Eva Marie, too. Like, when I realized that Eva Marie was actually a really great character when she started doing stuff in NXT.
Yeah, when you realized she was atrocious, but she was kind of owning it and just kind of right with it.
And she was being used in exactly the way that she should be.
That Bailey even rematch is still great. Anyway.
So good. One of my favorites.
We're about to get an interview with Mike Tyson. So, you know, Mike Tyson, he's going to be the enforcer at WrestleMania. We've got Jennifer Flowers as the whore of WrestleMania. We've got Pete Rose as the fraudster of WrestleMania. So we've got a wife beater, a whore, and a fraudster.
And a rapist. Yep.
So we're getting all the categories in.
a party.
We get a video package highlighting Mike Tyson's kind of, you know, WWF journey so far, an interview with Jim Ross with him. He talks about being in the WWF. So I'm interested here in what you think. So if you take away your disdain for Mike Tyson, the person, and you think about Mike Tyson, the character here. So he says, being in the WWF is a dream come true. He was a Steve Austin fan until, well, he was, even though they called him Cold Stone. He was a Steve Austin fan.
Steven Stone Cold.
He's got another one. I think it's in 2 weeks. It's so good. I can't wait for you to hear it. He calls Shawn Michaels something, and it's incredible.
Oh, I'm so excited.
He calls him by one word. I'm not even going to spoil.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so he was a Steve Austin fan, so he got disrespected in front of the world. Austin pissed him off pretty bad. JR wanted to know, you know, how can you be fair at WrestleMania? You know, don't you think that DX is just using you to get what they want? And then Tyson says, you know, if you not used anyone to get where you are today, that's the way the world works, and if you think otherwise, you need to get with the program. And when he was asked again if he can be fair, he tells JR that fair is winning and walks off. So what do you think of Mike Tyson's character's motivations?
So I guess I understand why Mike Tyson would join DX, because obviously Stone Cold Steve Austin did come out and disrespect him, so he would want to join the other guys, right? That makes sense to me. That is logical. It doesn't make me like Mike Tyson anymore, because I don't like DX and I already don't like Mike Tyson, so now I just don't like any of them. And I think Mike Tyson came across as pretty likable the whole time until JR asked if he can be fair, and he was like, do you think Mike Tyson's been treated fair in his life? You know, who's looking out for me? Well, no, you haven't been treated fairly. You got out of a 6-year jail sentence for rape after 3 years. That's not really very fair, is it, Mike Tyson? Oh, wait, you got the good end of that deal. Right. So it's hard for me to feel sympathetic toward Mike Tyson, and I just can't. But I was going to ask you, this video package that they did it almost as like a little mini documentary, and there were credits and stuff. Like, what even was this, and why did they think Big Daddy Kane?
I think that they just thought they want to just, like, hype up Mike Tyson as much as possible, so let's do a mini documentary with them. I can't explain it. This is a show that thinks Barry Windham deserves a European Championship match. What am I supposed to say? The Rock and Roll Express are legitimate? What?
I mean, it's just, I thought it was kind of a cool presentation. It was interesting, but then the credits at the end, and then Big Daddy Kane was in there, and I was like, what? Like, Kane has had nothing to do with this, and also, no one calls him Big Daddy. Like, what is happening here? But I thought the JR interview with Mike Tyson was quite good, because it did help to kind of solidify his motivations, which are, you know, exactly what I said and exactly what we thought they were. But, you know, he aligned with DX, and he, when JR asks, you know, and you've aligned with DX, Tyson opens his jacket to, like, proudly show his DX shirt because he's so proud of being in DX. And JR's like, yep, we get it. You're in DX. He was just unimpressed because he's JR and he's great. But, I mean, I don't think Tyson comes across as that likable, though, because when JR's like, you know, they use people, you understand that, right? Like, they use people and they're probably using you. And Tyson's like, everybody uses people. People use people all the time. What of it, basically? And so Tyson comes across like kind of a prick, because he is kind of a prick. And which I guess works, because he's in DX and I'm not supposed to like him.
This is true. So
is he supposed to come across as likable here?
No. I think it's meant to be, you know, you think the deck stacked against Steve Austin.
Yeah.
So, now,
which is kind of, again, a little bit Steve Austin's fault for being mental.
It is, but would we have him any other way?
No, absolutely not.
Now, in terms of Raw main events, there have been epic Raw main events. Would you put up this week's Raw main event as one of them?
You know, I just don't think I would, because Savio Vega versus Triple H is not exactly in the upper echelon of what I would consider an epic Raw main event. I mean, last week we were supposed to get Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Kane, right? We've had British Bulldog versus Owen Hart. We've had other things that I can't
flag,
like, really
match
remember.
With, like, we have like Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation against Austin and Undertaker and Foley and all these different things. And now we get Triple H and Savio Vega.
Which I wanted explained, because I thought Los Barriquas and DX were friends, and they didn't even mention that. I thought that maybe there had been dissension between Los Barriquas and DX. I wanted to know more about that story. I wanted to know why Savio Vega was facing Triple H in this main event. Turns out the answer was so Steve Austin can beat them up.
Pretty much. So yeah, basically the story is Triple H versus Savio Vega. There's loads of referees and agents surrounding the ring, so Triple H has some extra security after Steve Austin threatened them. Why are they giving Triple H the security? I do not understand.
I don't know.
There's like,
I wish it wouldn't have been Savio Vega. I wish it would have been like Bob Holly or something. Because I want the Los Barriquas DX thing explained before they're just going to fight.
You're maybe the only person in the world that cares. So within 30 seconds, Austin comes down to the ring. He stuns Gerald Briscoe. He stuns Mike Chioda. He stuns Savio Vega. And then here's Shawn Michaels. It was a setup all along. Austin turns around. Another sweet chin music. And then Helmsley celebrates and mounts Austin, just to kind of, you know, add more insult onto it. China hands Shawn a chair, and as they sit, Austin up to take a shot to the head. We run out of time and we go off air. So Austin is being outsmarted by DX, which is interesting because he's the guy that usually outsmarts everybody else. But Sean now, 2 weeks in a row, has outsmarted him.
Yeah, and it kind of makes you wonder, when is WrestleMania? What's the date of WrestleMania? Is it
March 29.
29, okay, so we still have a few weeks.
Two more Raws after this.
Okay, so because it really feels like things are ramping up, and if it goes on too much longer, then it might just go on too long before we get to WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting because you're right, Austin is the one who's usually the one who's calculating, and you know, we saw that before the Royal Rumble, how he was coming out and attacking everyone. And, you know, trying to even his odds for the Royal Rumble or whatever he was doing. It's Austin. Like, he always has plans and plots and schemes and all of that. And Austin thought he was being clever here by coming out and attacking, you know, Savio Vega and Triple H and just kind of coming in raging. But, yeah, Shawn Michaels was there all along. He really should have expected that, right? Like, Shawn Michaels could have been in a diner nearby. And apparently he was because he showed up in Sweet Chin Music, Steve Austin. So I like that things are ramping up between them, though, and it really does feel like Austin and Michaels are the story now, more than it has felt like Michaels and anyone is the story for the title since Shawn and Bret.
Yeah, no, it's the first story since Shawn and Bret that actually feels like, you know, the title means something and it's for something, because yeah. Like there's a the video package for WrestleMania, which you will get to, which I think is just one of the, I can't say enough great things about WrestleMania 14. It's one of my favorites, top five.
I think I've seen it, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. But, like, there's this whole thing where it's like, you know, I can't remember the exact verbiage, but it's like the narrator guy is like, you know, the rebel who, you know, is, you know, against tradition, but he wants desperately to be a part of it because he wants the belt. And that's kind of what Austin's thing is. You know, he wants to be the rebel, but he really just wants to be part of history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good story. So,
which I think is an interesting character dynamic for Austin, right? Like, he wants to buck authority and he wants to be so outside the system and he wants to do things his own way, but it's really because he wants to be accepted and loved.
That is it. So overall, where is your thumb going to be for this episode of Raw's War?
Honestly, I enjoyed this episode again. I don't know what's happening. 1998 has actually gotten kind of good. Maybe it's just because SmackDown is so dire right now, and I'm like, this is terrible. And like, by comparison, things that are logical and make sense and have story progression seem awesome. But I'm willing to go with it. I'm enjoying Retro Raw. I give this another thumbs up, Kenny. Where is your thumb for this episode?
Oh, this is a thumbs up. This is a good episode. Like, we've had like two really good ones in a row. I think because everything's now, like, before it was like we were building to No Way Out, and that was kind of like a placeholder, and the Rumble didn't really feel that epic. But like everything that, you know, we've got, you know, WrestleMania, we've got Austin, Tyson, Michaels, Rock and Shamrock, the Outlaws and Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, the Undertaker and Kane, Goldust and Luna against Meadow and Sable, the Battle Royal. Like, there's a lot of good stuff, so
yeah, I was into pretty much every story on this show, except maybe Owen Hart and Barry Windham.
Well, I mean, who could care?
Yeah. I mean, Owen Hart almost, it's not quite this bad, but Owen Hart feels kind of like Becky Lynch at this point, where he's just sort of aimless.
What a comparison. Owen Hart feels like Becky Lynch.
I mean, Owen has more of a story because he is going to be facing Triple H at WrestleMania, and there is that, but it's just, he just kind of feels like he's coming out here having matches, and I still really like him, and I still think he's really good, but I want Owen Hart to be able to do more.
Will next week be able to continue to give Sondra the thumbs up? So here's some of the matches we're going to get next week. We're going to get Luna versus Sable. We're going to get a European Championship match of Owen Hart defending against Triple H.
We're not.
Yes, we are. We're getting Chainsaw Charlie versus...
I don't trust it.
It happens. Like, it actually happens, I promise you.
Wow.
Chainsaw Charlie versus Billy Gunn. The Rock and Roll Express and Jim Cornette versus the Headbangers.
So a handicap match then?
Jeff Jarrett versus Tom Brandy. And Ken Shamrock versus D'Lo Brown. So... let's hope for some good fucking promos, because those matches sound deplorable.
They do. I mean, to be honest, some of them don't sound all bad. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, so that's next week's show. We will be back. So I guess whose song would you like to play us out here on this week's episode?
You know what? I think we should play Sable's theme.
She is wild and cat-like, and this week she was a little bit like Baby Jane. Here's Sable, everybody. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. Twitter. On you go.
Oh, right. Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus content if you want to hear us talk about Fastlane, which we have to watch, but you don't have to. And also, yeah, I will be expressing my thoughts about a potential Shane McMahon-Dolph Ziggler match. And as you can imagine, I'm not very happy about it. I will expound later. Enjoy Sable's whips, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Ow!